Hi, and welcome to Night Clerk Radio. This is episode 43, Autumnal Dark Jazz. It is autumn, soon to be winter, and we're talking about dark jazz for these dark months. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Burke. How are you doing?
I'm very autumnal right now.
I want to give a quick shout out to our bonus episodes from October and our upcoming bonus episode. In October, we talked about horror in haunted music, and Caleb was our guest. So that was a fun live episode in terms of, like, we were recorded in person together.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah. It was quite a lot of fun to do. And then Burke had a great idea for our bonus episode for November, where we're going to be talking about physical media in haunted music, particularly the sort of renaissance of the last 5-10 years ish of vinyl, cassettes, wax cylinders.
Yes, for some.
Yeah, for some. There, VHS tapes. That's another one. Yeah, there's a resurgence in actual physical devices. Not CDs, though. CDs are just too good.
Yeah, they're too good. And they never really, well, maybe they did, but they don't really feel like they went away in the same way. Like nothing replaced, like streaming replaced CDs, but nothing physical has. So it doesn't have the same novelty as going back to vinyl or cassette. For me, anyway.
I mean, that's true. That's like, actually, if you want to get music in the highest quality format, that a CD is the way to go. Like,
yeah,
it is a perfect record of that music, unlike every other physical media to some degree. Yeah, we figured it out, and that's why it's boring. So, or Game Boy cartridge. Yeah, there's a lot of weird physical media, and there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about that. And of course, we both collect it a little bit.
That's right.
So, yeah, so this episode, we're going back to dark jazz, because dark jazz is very good, and it's a colder, slower month, technically. I mean, slower than summer, obviously. But
for sure.
Yeah, we both independently kind of thought about the influence of seasons on our music. Certainly for me, the seasons do affect me. Certainly my drinking preferences changes from, you know, sours and light beers to stouts and other dark hearty beverages.
Yeah, like for me, like winter's really when the spirits come out.
Certainly with the music too, you know, when it's getting dark around 5 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock, you know, I always like dark jazz, but certainly it seemed more appropriate to reach into that more melancholic music. And I think we both picked really good albums for this episode for this reason. Certainly for me, one of my motives for this episode was, like, after we chose the genre dark jazz, I was like, you know what? I want to try and find an album that's like Miles to Midnight, but not. I really like Miles to Midnight, but I want to have more albums like it that are not exactly like it, but like close enough to it. And our previous episode on dark jazz, they didn't quite hit that mark. They were good, but they weren't weird enough. And I feel like now I've listened to enough dark jazz that I feel like the formula, well, not the formula, but like the components to me, obviously one part jazz and the other part, there has to be something very not jazz, something very weird and eerie, ominous, something to unnerve you, something to.
Yeah.
These two albums both do that in their own way. And I'm quite excited to talk about them. I mean, do you have a formula or a theory on dark jazz yet, Burke?
Not really. No, I would say the thing that's most appealing about going back to dark jazz after being away from it, looking back at my notes, like just thinking about what I wrote about this album, I definitely think I agree in some level with that weird aspect. I didn't really associate with dark jazz because I think that's true of most media I consume. It has to have something a little, I'm going to say offbeat, but not in the musical sense. It just has to have something that's like, how did that get in there?
Yeah.
Because I feel like as much as I can enjoy stuff, if I understand every component, it's less interesting to me.
Yeah. The imperfection in a way. Certainly with movies, if something is too Hollywood well-made in the sense that the script and the action, everything are just sort of entirely unified and there's nothing personal about it. It's just following the beats of the hero's journey to a T.
That very by committee. So there's actually a little off topic, but there's a great video. It's an older one on Red Letter Media where they watched at the time. There were three Transformers movies out and they just watched them simultaneously. They just set up three TVs and just hit play on all of them at the same time. And it's all like first cut to Shia LaBeouf is a 17 minutes in all of them. And like,
oh my God,
the first fight's at 28 minutes. It's just like perfect. And, but each one is just a little bit longer because they have a little bit more budget to add a little bit more stuff, but all the beats are the same.
Yeah. I mean, certainly with a lot of those, these kind of like corporate art forms, you feel like they're doing these things in sort of a ritual way, like they don't understand the significance of why you have these story beats or you have these elements in a thing, and they're just like, it was successful before, we must imitate it. Even and with music too, like so much pop music blends into each other that it's hard. I mean, there are stylistic differences because of fads or trends or whatever, but like something where, there's something that makes you take notice, something that's intensely personal, unusual, something reflective of a idiosyncratic worldview. Like that's what's notable about art.
Yeah. And probably like overstating this is more dramatic than it is. But I think also part of it is so many decisions are so like data driven algorithm type stuff that if there's just something that's like, oh, like only a human would choose to do this.
Yeah.
Just stands out. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like people to go back to movies for a second, like everyone points to like Jaws being the formula, the archetype of the summer blockbuster. But Jaws, there are a lot of very like personal idiosyncratic thing, like that whole section where Quinn is talking about surviving a shark attack in World War II, you know, in Indianapolis. It's like this whole thing that's sharp edged. That's because of the Spielberg understood storytelling on a level that like all the movies that imitated it afterwards, like the Jaws sequels and movies like Orca and all these others, like fail to replicate, because it's just like, yeah, you got to have something that doesn't like quite follow it. Like all that was just characterization of these. You could have cut that and the plot would have stayed the same. It did nothing to advance the plot, but it advanced the characters. And yeah, as one example, and in music again, like both of these albums have a lot of idiosyncratic elements to them. So why don't we dive in?
Absolutely.
Left in that pestilential place and utterly without a power to hope for comfort, I could neither sit nor lie down. There was no room. I was placed, as it were, in a hole in the wall, and those walls, terrible to look on of themselves, hemmed me in on every side. I could not breathe. There was no light. All was thick darkness. I did not understand how it is. Though there was no light, yet everything that can give pain by being seen was visible.
So that unsettling little monologue is in the middle of track 8, Unbecoming, off our first album, A Greater Bliss, by Cryo Chamber artist Word Clock. So I am playing the role of Ross Payton and doing the Cryo Chamber album this episode.
Yeah. I kind of have a thing.
You do. I mean, you introduced me to them, so I'm always going to associate you with.
All right. That's
with
fair.
That is. Yeah. So Word Clock is a longtime Cryo Chamber artist. It's the alias of a Portuguese composer, Pablo Pimentel. And he's been doing this sort of dark ambient, dark jazz since 2014. I picked this album quite just basically because I wanted to do something fairly new. And this came out in September of 2021. So really about a month before we're recording this. And it was just, I do like Cryo Chamber's mixes, their YouTube mixes a lot. Mm-hmm. And Word Clock was just all over a recent dark jazz mix. So I just kind of wanted to dive into it.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because they made a music video, an actual music video to it. And it has... Mm-hmm. this very golden, warm color hue of these weird fungal, weird, you know, growths that are, I think, CG created. But like, it's a really interesting vision for an album.
Yeah, which is like the first thing I think worth talking about. So this album's interesting because the composer is Portuguese, and it's looking back at some of the past staff list, I think this is probably the biggest collaboration he's been able to put together for a piece of work. So it's an international collaboration of other European artists and then an American saxophonist. And it brings in all kinds of diverse instrumentation and genre influences to do this like religious neoclassical kind of themed album, which I also thought that the theming and concept was really appealing, which is another reason I picked it, like this kind of religious dark synth, dark jazz.
Yeah.
From people who weren't necessarily raised in like the modern American Christian tradition.
Yeah. I'm really curious about the, this is complete speculation, but I perhaps like the religious, you know, influence, like growing up as a child in Europe and going to European church services and being exposed to that music and, you know, maybe a great cathedral or something like that. Certainly more awe-inspiring than what we get in most churches in America, that old school music meant to literally inspire awe, to make you feel tiny and insignificant to the holy presence in these great vaulted buildings with amazing acoustics. So I wonder, I would not be very surprised if that would turn out to be a very direct influence on this album.
I think so. And really, I think folding in other religions outside of Europe, I'm sure that was part of it, but I feel like it's a broader interest because the liner notes talk about like the universality of religious visions and apparitions, trying to kind of capture those myths in music and in sort of like pensive, meditative or driving music. And they cite both European and Middle Eastern origins as kind of being interest.
I could see that. It's also very like, I got kind of like a Baroque feeling. It's very intricate in places. It's a very, it's really like just this theming for the album for a dark jazz album is really unique. And of course the title and the title of not only the album, A Greater Bliss, but the song tracks, the titles, you know, the beatific as track seven, you know, come triumphant track nine, you know, like, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's just a lot going on here. And I feel like we're only getting part of the story here. Like I feel like there's a lot of intense discussions among this group to figure out the hidden mythology of it.
Yeah. I was going to say along those lines, and it's also clearly all over the visual influence of the album. So like the album cover is, I don't remember the name of the painting, but it's the famous picture of like Jesus with his hand up, but like the sacrament cup is spilled and his head is replaced by like an exploding dome, but there's like a dog's body or something on the chest. It's like,
it's
really wild mix of influences, kind of psychedelic almost. It's to stare at.
Yeah, for sure. And the music, certainly, you know, we talked about like one part jazz, one part weird. This does have the weird quite heavily. You mentioned the monologue.
Yeah, the opening sample. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think my favorite part is actually in track five, The Less of Me, because God, the vocals sound almost identical. I don't know exactly how they're distorting, but like I was reminded of the end of the John Carpenter movie, Prince of Darkness, where people in the future are sending subliminal messages in dreams. The year is 1999.
It's all muffled and obscured.
It's all muffled. Yeah, that's the key word, muffled.
It's like yelling through. They're like yelling through three walls.
And you get that exactly in here. So like you're in a weird monastery and you're hearing someone praying in a cell, across the hall or something like that. But like Prince of Darkness was sampled, that sample from the movie was sampled by DJ Shadow. Listen to that God knows how many times. And now they're doing new, like, I don't know. It's extremely my jam.
No, I agree. I love, you mentioned beatific, I guess the one song, like that has so much awesome, like drone and chanting mm-hmm. and stuff going on. But one interesting thing that occurred a lot, actually, in this album, well, not a lot, like three times, is this interesting sax piece, which sounds like this. So this weird, I don't want to say weird because that sounds derogatory, but this this like sax fluttering rapidly, like just kind of between three notes, occurs in several songs. So that was from the end of track two, Meant, but it also appears again on other tracks.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if you knew or if anybody out there knows if that's some like saxophone jazz interpretation of like a different piece of ritual music.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I really did like those, that fluttering. Yeah. I feel like that is some sort of religious music or influenced by it, but yeah.
Because the first time I heard it, and it lasts, I think I picked this track sampled because it's the point where it lasts the longest. Mm-hmm. Cause it is kind of like the back minute or so of track two. Mm-hmm. In addition to like the overall energy coming up, but like, I wondered if it was some sort of like, if you kind of defocus, then it becomes calming. Like, cause at mm-hmm. first it's like chaotic and I think fluttering is the word you used in the notes. That's like the best word for it. Mm-hmm. But eventually it just starts to wash over you and become like back to calmness. Mm-hmm. Like, I just didn't know if there's some like Zen or Buddhist type, like pushing through into some other existence type thing with that, cause it just goes and goes. And eventually it just, you don't even notice it. I don't know. It's like a weird listening experience.
Yeah.
All the times I listen to it.
Yeah. There is a lot, like for an Omni album, it's not just like a textured soundscape. There's a lot of variation. There's a lot of complexity. Yeah. Like track one opens in this like cacophony, like some mandolin in it, you know, it's like, oh yeah. And then there, like throughout the album, there are these occasional like crescendos. That's how I can track it. Like track four, the Waited Upon Us and like chimes or like bells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of varied instrumentation, which I really liked.
Yeah.
I think the defining feature of this, funny you mentioned the first track, because that was actually my least favorite.
Okay.
I think it's the most like classic cryo chamber ambient track on the album at first. And I was like, oh, it's just another one of these. But I'm a professional.
Yeah.
Stuck with it. And yeah, once you get into track two, it's was my album. So I have to really, it'd be really weird if I was like, nah, I don't listen to my own album. and I don't mind things like we always say, it's very cryo chamber is like a joke. It's not an insult, but it is like style.
Yeah. There is a style to it. The curation of albums.
But once you break through that, it really, you know, becomes this very interesting album after like halfway through track two. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, okay, here we go. And then just all this, like, I love some of the synth production on this with like these like rippling synths.
Oh, yeah.
Just a lot of great drone-ish work on here.
Yeah.
Which the track you mentioned, Waited Upon Us, which I think was my favorite also because I think music like this, I don't know why I always get hung up on like track length, but I think music like this needs to be long.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think it really needs to give you like 9 to 12 minutes.
Yeah.
To really sink in what's happening or like be fully consumed by it.
Mm-hmm. But like shorter tracks are good as well. I think track four would probably be my single favorite, but I also really liked how the album ends. Track nine, Come Triumphant.
Yes.
Because it's like this very revelatory music. It's an epiphany. It's very, I don't want to say quite optimistic, but it's quite bright compared to some of the other tracks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You finally have a vision.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
you've you've completed your goal.
A greater bliss indeed. So yeah, it's just like, and the thing is, I had not listened to this album. I saw it come out and I listened to those tracks on the dark jazz mix that they put on YouTube. But I was like, I looked at the album. I was like, this is not dark jazz. What the fuck is this? I'll listen to this later. But then, so I'm glad we went back to review this album, because it is one of my favorite things. And it's Miles to Midnight, but not in a way, in its own way. It's like really weird, but jazzy. And yeah,
I think one of the things that Miles to Midnight has that some other ambient albums lack is like that sense of storytelling. I do think this kind of carries you through like a variety of, it's not as defined, but I do think there is something from kind of starting out more chaotic and then kind of going through these layers of weirdness and then coming out like triumphant on the other end.
Yeah.
Like that's more than like a lot of dark ambient albums put into it.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. That was track two, Liquid Jihad, from Deadbeat by the Orchestra of Mirrored Reflections, a Ukrainian dark jazz group that I recently discovered. I was actually looking through, first I looked through the dark jazz and doom jazz tags on Bandcamp. Nothing jumped out at me. Well, I mean, several albums looked okay, but then I decided to look up dark jazz mixes on YouTube, and the first mix I found had one of their tracks on the mix, and I was like, what? The Orchestra of Mirrored Reflections? What is this group? I've never heard of them. So I looked them up, and I was like, oh, wow, this is great. I think Deadbeat is their most popular album. Came out in March of 2017, but it's certainly a well-reviewed album, and I quite like it. This is a more jazz album then, but like there are ambient elements to it than our previous album, but it's got a real mix of jazz from slow to really active, as in the second half of the album kind of transitions to a more ambient style of music. But it's very meditative and chill, but like not 100%. It's not happy jazz. Like so I quite like it. And these, mostly it's a longer album. It's nearly an hour long, and with very long tracks, only 7 tracks. So, so you quite liked it, huh?
Oh yeah. I thought this album was really great. I don't know, like long nights, long tracks, man. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I want. It's funny you picked the first sample as Liquid Jihad, 'cause like it's such a wild song name. And then it's just, yeah, such like a energetic and dissonant track.
Yeah, I really like how track two opens up with like this weird tension, this like string just kind of underbeat, like right before the jet. Like you hear right as it opens up, and then the sax cuts in, and then like I suspected you like this one because there's a lot of great drums in these tracks. I think
drums are a lot, and like physical, like active and actual drummer, which is another thing I really liked about really both albums, but a bit more on this one is just a wide variety of physical instruments or, you know, like interesting sounds through patching. 'Cause there are some things I heard that are not listed on the like personnel list, like a lot of the drone and stuff, which we can talk about, but, like Sakuhachi, which is like a Japanese woodwind, I guess. Is that technically true? I don't know if it's technically a woodwind, but yeah, it's like a flute. It's like a large flute. Stuff like that is really interesting. And, I really liked also this album for its evolution, because like the first few tracks, especially the first one, is like just kind of like noir jazz.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it kind of goes into like Liquid Jet, which is like this crazy track. And then track three is Stargazing, which starts off like moody, but still pretty like traditional jazz-ish.
Yeah. And then it introduces that like low synth.
Yeah. Sweep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the back half just really gives into ambient mm-hmm. and like really becomes much less defined. And then that continues like into track four, mm-hmm. which then I felt was like the first very like dark track, third mm-hmm. one from the sun, just yeah. like very sinister track. Like,
yeah, there's like some faint radio, like a signal kind of feedback under it. Mm-hmm. Like it's, it kind of builds up in volume. Like it's just getting, yeah. Yeah. It does have this really interesting go like path journey, whatever you want to call it, from like noir's jazz to like full on ambient. Mm-hmm. And then again, it ends with this really warm, inviting kind of track with like an accordion flute music. Like, I don't know. It's
yeah. I think it's accordion doing that drone.
Yeah. It was really nice. I liked it, but we should get just to show you the range of the album. This is from the same album, but here is a sample from track six. The Lay Your Head Down on My Withering Cloud. And that's just, I mean, that's just nice. It's just like these lovely chimes. It's very meditative. I don't know. I quite enjoy that. And like, this is the same album that we had that really tense jazz earlier on.
Yeah. I think we both wrote that one's just like straight up ambient.
Because
it's perfectly yeah. placed. It's like perfectly placed because the one track that was really wild to me, I know we're kind of like jumping around the album. Mm-hmm. But is track five, the one right yeah. before that, We Would Meet Again One Sunny Day. Because mm-hmm. it's long, but it has this like, I think it's like a reverb effect on the snare or the drums overall. Or like okay. some type of delay because yeah. it just has this like distorting processing effect. Mm-hmm. It just the beat doesn't sound solid. So it's like hard to like lock yourself into kind of where you are mm-hmm. in the music. I don't know. I don't have a good vocabulary to describe it. But yeah, it just sounds a little off.
Yeah.
But it's so long that after about 5 or 6 minutes, you're like, you just kind of like switch into the new mode. Like you just kind of get pulled.
Yeah. It's kind of like they've got like lapping ocean waves almost at points. Mm-hmm. And I put it as like recovering from a hangover. Like it's like there's pain, okay. but it's also calm. And you just want it to be sort of like chill, but you can't quite get there because, you know, your head hurts. So yeah, it's languid. Yeah, I'm really glad I found this group. I really love their name, and I'm definitely going to look at some of their latest albums from 2019, so I think they may still be around. They may have just, you know, mm-hmm. slowed down because of, you know, the pandemic and everything, like so many other groups did, so.
Yeah, or, you know, they actually have some time between releases, perhaps.
Yeah. yeah.
Which with some of the stuff, it can take longer, you know. Mm-hmm. Word Clock, our first artist, has only done... I mean, this in a good way, has done four albums since 2014. So that means that they, for whatever reason, took their time with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think spending like a year or 2 years on an album is fine. Like, I don't.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, there are some artists who crank one out every 4 months. But like, I do know, like, while researching this, I was reading discussions of ambient. And I remember, I don't remember which album it was. Somebody, oh, this is just another Spambian album. Which I like that idea. And like, you can see that like there are some ambient artists who are just spamming stuff out. Like it's easy to like, once you get going with, I imagine you can just crank out some, you know, generative soundscapes and call it a day. But I think that's why Cryo Chamber, I like Cryo Chamber so much because they even they have a style, but like each album is unique and has interesting things about it. At least all the ones that I've listened to so far. They do put out a lot of albums, but they have a lot of artists in their stable, I guess.
Yeah, it's never really bothered me.
Yeah, but I just like that term. But yeah, these both these albums are the farthest from that.
Sure.
I do want to say this is also a group that has sort of an occult, mystical kind of theme for their album, which I did not intend. But like the notes for this album say there is a ritual when one comes to a cemetery and offers their body to a hungry demons by blowing a bone trumpet for a cleansing by sacrificing all fears. I've done it in India and I'm doing it in Ukraine.
Enjoy.
Yeah. So like, I guess if you want to be dark jazz musicians, you have to be into some weird stuff, which makes sense. You know, some occult things, which is the least surprising thing. I now that I think about it. Yeah.
Sure. But it is kind of interesting. I was going to ask about that as kind of my final mm-hmm. discussion point for this album, but you beat me to it.
Yeah.
Is, you know, is it was also semi-religious themed, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Like I picked these albums independently. So like,
yeah,
we did not look at consult and like, yeah, we want to have this theme for this. So just kind of how it works out.
Just how it goes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of interesting when things align like that, you know, kind of both pick mm-hmm. similar themed albums, kind of both thinking about seasons when listening to that music. So, yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this album. I want to reiterate, you mentioned it, but how awesome the last track is mm-hmm. as like a send-off track. I was thinking about it and like, man, I just love all those layers of accordion drone and then all mm-hmm. the weird string stuff. So there's like stringed instruments. And clearly being bow, you know, to play with traditional bow, but there's also like pizzicato, which is like plucking when you pluck a violin instead of playing it with a bow. But then it also sounded like just like scraping on the strings and stuff.
Yeah.
Just it was really cool. It was a really, really fascinating ending track.
Why don't we put a sample of that in there?
Why don't we?
Thanks for listening. Our next episode is going to be on culture jamming. It's another philosophical discussion on, well, what is culture jamming and what's happening with it now? If you never heard the term, well, you should tune in next time to find out. And if you are familiar, we can hear our thoughts on the subject.
And tell us how wrong we are.
Yeah, please. Yeah, just tell us what you think. It's all about the engagement on the algorithms. But if you like our show and you want to hear more, we have more than a few at this point bonus episodes on our Patreon. Like we mentioned, note for November, we're going to be talking about physical media, but we've talked about horror. We've talked about, well, quite a few different things, and it's more content for you. We also have a Discord where we hang out and talk about music, and I share music memes and jokes, and it's very, and just music links. But if you want to talk to us, let us know what you think of the show. We are at Night Clerk Radio on Twitter. I am at Ross Payton. Burke is at Burke McBurkinson. We have a website, of course, nightclerkradio.com. And we have a Facebook page. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you listen to podcasts on, 5 stars and a positive review. And tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies. Just tell people about Night Clerk Radio. Spread the word of haunted music.